Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. It is Tuesday, July 5th, and I'm your host, Kara Santamaria. A happy Independence Day, or I should say a day after Independence Day, to all of my American listeners. It was a fun one because I did nothing. I organized the garage, and I felt very accomplished. And then we watched beautiful fireworks from my house because I could see the displays of, I don't even know, probably 50 of the closest neighboring cities. It was pretty insane and really beautiful. I hope that you guys had a wonderful holiday weekend as well. To celebrate this holiday weekend, I have a really fun guest on the podcast. But before we jump into our interview, I want to thank those of you who have made Talk Nerdy possible this week by visiting www.patreon.com/talknerdy and pledging to support the show. Specifically, I want to give a shout out to Phil T-Bear, Timothy Glover, Rod Adams, Charles Payet, Jafe, The Honorable Husband, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Ken Pfeiffer, Brian Holden, and last but certainly not least, Jeffrey Sewell. Thank you guys so much. Without support like yours, Talk Nerdy would definitely not be possible. And if you're interested in supporting the show, you know there's a lot of ways you can do it. Go ahead and visit my website, carasantamaria.com. Click around and you'll find some options there. All right, guys, you may remember Dr. Tegan Wall. She was an early guest on the podcast and so much fun. She is a neuroscientist, an economist, a science communicator above all other things, and probably one of the smartest people I know. I had a blast chatting with her, and I hope that you enjoy listening. So without any further ado, here she is, Dr. Tegan Wall. Tegan!
Kara!
I am going to try A, not to hiccup.
Okay.
Because I have the hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
And B, to explain, I have no idea if people can hear it, but there are like endless fireworks going off in the distance because we're recording this on Sunday, July 3rd.
Oh, you can just saw one out the window.
I don't have a good angle. None of them are going off where I'm looking. It's Sunday, July 3rd, so it's going to get crazy tomorrow night. But do you think that different cities do their... No, they're still going to do them on Monday. You can't like shift July 4th early.
That's not true. Actually, last year I went to Santa Monica's, was like a week early.
That's weird.
It was awesome.
Yeah, but it's weird.
It was like on my friend's birthday. He was like, Santa Monica celebrates my birthday.
So last year when our house was being renovated, you and some friends came here and watched fireworks from our balcony.
Yeah, you weren't even home.
I wasn't home because I was working.
We just hung out in your backyard.
Was it good?
It was awesome.
Because I'm really looking forward to it tomorrow night.
It was literally for like an hour and a half, constant fireworks in every direction.
But what I heard is that since they're all far away, that you can't really hear them. So I think Holly told me. Was Holly there?
Holly was there.
Yeah, I think she told me that Zan played like patriotic music on his iPhone.
So a lot of fireworks shows like do music that they set the fireworks to. And you can hear the fireworks, but you can't hear the music at all. And so Zan got out his phone and was playing like 1776 or like like weird patriotic music.
Like America the Beautiful. Like, okay, everybody had their hands over their hearts. What's happening? It'll be fun.
It was a good time.
I'm not the most patriotic person, but I think it'll be fun. I'm still happy that we're, you know, have had our independence from England.
I mean, it's like America figured out Brexit like 200 something years ago.
That's
like 240.
True.
We've got this.
But Brexit just fucked up their own Brexit. So. Oh, yeah. So when Brexit happened, which is still happening, by the way,
right.
But when the decision was made, we knew that it was going to affect a lot of financial markets.
Right.
You were working in a financial job.
So Brexit happened in America on a Thursday night, and my last day was Friday. And it was funny because it's a global macro firm.
Mm-hmm.
So things like this, big changes like this, affect us a lot. We do a lot of like currency stuff. I say we, I don't work there anymore,
yeah.
But this company does a lot of like currency stuff. And around the office, everyone was looking at how we were positioned, and it's a quant firm, so they don't take views on things like this. They don't take
none of the things you said make sense.
Okay.
You said it's a quant firm.
Quant firm, which means it's all quantitative modeling.
Okay.
So it looks at data that comes in and then makes a decision about where it thinks markets are going to go based on different models.
Okay.
But it doesn't take qualitative views on things like announcements or votes.
Hilarious. So when there's a huge change and you all know why it changed, it's trying to, it doesn't have a why.
We can take risk down to avoid big things like this affecting our models because our models can't see them.
Yeah.
But for this, everyone was looking at our models and we were like, okay, we've taken risk way down, but Bromane is going to hurt us.
Bromane.
That was.
So if they had Bromained, actually,
we were like, we
used to lose money.
Just looking at where our models are set up right now, Bermain is going to hurt us. And everyone thought that Bermain was going to happen.
Of course. None of us thought they would actually vote yes on Brexit.
Exactly. And so we were very much was like, okay, companies give us their money for these models. We have to let the models run. Like, to shut everything down would be admitting, like, the models aren't bad. They just don't know what's happening with this. So we're going to leave, we're going to take risk way down, we're going to leave everything running, and we're going to take this hit and hope it's a small one. And Brexit happened, and we came in on Friday, and everyone was like, yeah, this is awful, woohoo, oh shit.
It was like The Big Short. Yeah. Oh no.
I mean, we didn't make that much money, but it was very much, it made it really easy for me to be like, England is out and so am I.
And so is Tegan.
Have fun, kids.
Yeah, because literally everyone else lost money. Or at least they're in the process.
A lot of global macro firms actually did all right.
Interesting. So global macro firms, there's always somebody who stands to gain when a lot of other people lose. And that, and now you no longer work. Ooh, I saw firework. Now you no longer work in the financial industry because it sucked your soul out of
because
your head.
Because it a little bit destroyed my soul.
So if people don't remember, you were episode 37 of Talk Nerdy. So you were on well over a year ago. You are a core member of the Nerd Brigade, and you have a really interesting academic past. So we talked a lot the last time you were on about what – so basically just to –
recap.
Have a PhD.
Yes.
But it's not in economics.
No.
It's in neuroscience.
Computation and neural systems.
Computation and neural systems from Caltech.
Yes.
And there you studied?
I studied nicotine addiction using mouse models.
Cool. And then, but before that, you got
a master's.
You got a master's in?
Behavioral and social neuroscience.
Behavioral and social neuroscience. So we're building backward now. Maybe we should have started at the
beginning. I got that in passing, also from Caltech. That's basically their neuroeconomics degree.
Gotcha.
And so when I was doing too much biology, they were like, get out, take a master's and go. And I had to switch departments.
And then you finish your, and then you work through to the PhD.
Right.
But before that, you had a dual undergrad?
So in undergrad, I had 2 degrees, mm-hmm. but one of them was a dual major.
Gotcha. So you actually had three.
3 majors and a minor.
Focuses. Okay. And so what, your first degree that wasn't split, what was that?
The Bachelor of Science in Mathematics with, I believe my minor was technically in Decision Neuroscience.
Okay. And then your other dual major was?
Economics and Political Science.
Okay. So you're taking all of these core areas of thought, neuroscience, math, econ.
It basically is just all why people suck. Like, people are really bad at making decisions in literally every aspect of their life. Let's look into that.
And so then it really does make sense. I think for people who maybe don't know anything about economics, and this is why we focused in episode 37, they think economics and neuroscience, what do those have to do with each other? But you taught me the real definition of econ, and it's not just about money.
No, it's economics is the study of the allocation of finite resources to fulfill unlimited wants.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do.
And it's all decision making.
And it's the reason all politicians end up making decisions that we're pissed about.
Yeah.
Because all politicians are faced with bad decisions that they have to make.
Well, and they say that in a perfect democracy, all the people vote for is bread and circuses.
And especially in California where we have ballot initiatives. So yeah. Like one pass, we'll vote.
Well, here it's like bread circuses and weed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we do. Or we vote it down and then we vote it back and then we vote it.
We're like gay people. No gay people. Gay people.
So terrible. Weed. But what we love to do in California, because we're idiots, is we love to vote for all the stuff and then vote down how we're going to pay for all this stuff, yeah. Which is basically the core. Bread and circuses. And so you decided, after finishing at Caltech with all these very schmancy degrees, let's make some money.
I decided to, yeah, not be poor. I was like, you know what sucked? Poverty.
Being a graduate student.
Well, actually, grad school was pretty nice. Grad school, I had my stipend. I got paid regularly.
You get insurance. That's like a huge thing. Oh, you have health insurance.
Well, I had health insurance through my parents until I was 26. Thanks, Obama.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you're a baby.
Yeah. I'm little.
You're little.
And then I had health insurance through Caltech as well.
Yeah.
There's certain types of taxes you don't have to pay from your stipend because it's a stipend and not a paycheck.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And also if you're paying back on loans, if you had any at your master's or your undergrad level, that helps you like avoid certain types of taxes, right?
I mean, it's a deduction. That's pretty minimal.
Yeah.
But I mean, you like a regular salary of like 28K.
But you know what? When you're not used to working,
it does help. You're working minimum wage 60 hours a week, it was such a nice gig.
And also, I think a lot of people don't realize that most graduate programs, not all though, I will be honest, there are a lot, especially at state schools and things where they struggle and they can't afford to do this, but most, I should say PhD, not master's programs, but PhD students, not only do you get a stipend or you get a teaching, you know, you get a certain amount from teaching or a certain amount from working in a lab in a kind of vocational capacity, but you don't pay tuition.
Right.
Like, that's the main thing. Like, you're on fellowship. So
if you're in a PhD program and you are paying them to be there, reevaluate your life choices, please.
Yeah,
reach out to me on Twitter. We'll talk.
Yeah, because it's very – it's gotten to be very rare that people have to pay for even
– it's a job. You are working for a very small amount of money. You are producing research for an institute, for a PI, and – you're working for so cheap because you are being told that when you do enough work, you also get this piece of paper that says doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are paying for that, it's not worth it. It's not worth
it. I can't imagine, because it also takes a long time.
Yeah.
You managed to get out pretty quickly, but I know a lot of people whose PhDs run them 6-7 years.
The average at Caltech, I think, is 5.8 years.
Yeah. And that's like, remember, Caltech is like the institution of overachievers, and the average is 5.8 years.
But that just also means that the professors are overachieving in how much they can get out of their grad students.
That's true.
You will never graduate.
So you did all that work. You decided to go into the financial industry.
Mm-hmm.
You made some money.
I did. It was nice.
Lost your soul.
Have some really nice shoes out of it, at least.
Good. That's good. And now you're working on finding your soul again.
I am. I quit that job and am now in communications.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I found I was turning down science communication work, which I love. It's why I'm on this podcast.
And that's because you had like a standard 9-to-5 and you couldn't take certain gigs.
And not only that, but there's certain things that you can't do for, like, what's the word?
Conflict of interest?
Yeah.
But you're afraid you're representing that company when you go out. And,
right.
Yeah.
So getting paid for anything outside of it, I had to get pre-approved.
Oh, interesting.
Doing anything where I was like talking in front of people, I was supposed to get pre-approved.
Yeah.
There were so many things that it was like I couldn't talk about finance anywhere. I couldn't appear anywhere as a representative of the company.
Yeah.
And getting paid for any of the work that I wanted to be doing, any of the writing, any of the talks, any of the whatever, was very, very difficult.
You know, I think a lot of full-time salaried jobs, like W-2 jobs, are like that. It's funny because I see some of my friends who work at NASA struggling with that, because every time you go out, you're basically representing NASA. And so you have to have pre-approval from the press office and make sure it's something where you're comfortable doing that. And I know other jobs can be more laxed, where it's like, well, so long as you do it, you don't mention the company, then now you're not representing us. I had the same problem when I was at HuffPost. They ultimately muscled me out because I was getting good SciComm jobs, good TV jobs. And they're like, you have to choose. Like, you can't do both, which I guess is,
I mean,
fair.
But there's also things like, and some of this I agree with, mm-hmm. but like, if I wanted to donate to a political campaign, not only do I have to get that pre-approved,
that's fucked up,
but I'm limited in how much I can give.
And that's because you work for a financial institution.
It's because I work for a financial
institution. So I guess that actually regulatorily, that's not a word, came from a place that was necessary. But right. It's weird that like an employee who's doing
but
it
as a personal.
But you
have to like sign things that are like, I have not, like even when you mm-hmm. get the job, you're like, I have not, or this is when I have donated to political campaigns in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's weird.
And you can't, like, if I wanted to host a fundraiser for a candidate in my house, even if it's like a fucking school board, I can't do that. You cannot solicit donations, period.
Yeah. You know, when I was working as an adjunct professor, I was working for a public university, mm-hmm. First in the state of Texas and then in the state of New York. And I remember around election time, I was always very, very open about the fact that, like, you should vote, you should vote, you should vote. And a lot of professors were like, you're on thin ice when you talk about voting. And I'm like, why? I'm not saying who you should vote for. And they're like, you just have to be very careful. Because at one point, I do remember I had to take my Obama sticker off my car because it was parked in the public lot.
Yeah.
And that was like a violation of like ethics, because I could be influencing votes as a public official in a university.
Well, and that was so hard for me because, like, I have an undergrad degree in political science. Mm-hmm. The only reason I got that degree, seriously, the only reason is because I was volunteering for a congressional campaign and I was like, I need to get something out of this. I'm spending like 20 to 40 hours a week working on this campaign. I bet I can convince my university to give me like internship credit for
yeah.
it. So I got like 6 credits out of it, which was essentially half of my poli sci degree.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I was putting in, you know, 20 to 40 hours at this campaign. By the end of it, I think I put in like 40 hours in 2 days. Like,
I'm sure.
As we approached election day. But I've always been so politically involved, and to suddenly be like, not only can you not donate money, but you can't donate time mm-hmm. if it's anywhere close to soliciting donations. You can't donate more than a certain, like, the restrictions are so insane.
And it's one of those things that I wonder if it's a generational issue, a cultural shift that we're seeing, because you technically, you're a millennial. I think I'm even a millennial, but
you're
I'm pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You could pick one. Whichever pick you like one. Better today. You could
and
be
then
Gen X or a
you're
millennial.
Probably like true mid-millennial, because yeah. you're not quite like, what are they called? Like the aughts.
Yeah.
Or
no.
Now they have a new name that they're using in marketing. I'm seeing all the time. That's called the
I got a young cousin who's technically part of the generation below me, and I've always heard it called recently I've heard it referred to as the second silent generation.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
We used a term, I want to look it up.
It's super depressing because
he's very
like
depressing.
He's like 15 and I'm just like, oh, I'm so
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, good luck.
So sorry, buddy.
No, we used a term in a recent piece that I wrote that I had never heard before, but it was about Silicon Beach here in LA. And so it was a lot of these young media companies that focus on like YouTube talent and on the web.
Yeah.
And so they, of course, know all the like buzzwords for marketing. And I'm trying to look it up as I talk so that I can waste more time until I can open the fucking file. I know that it was in my A block script for that piece. So finally, I love Google Drive or Docs, which is now in Drive. It's
whatever.
Organized in Drive. It's very annoying. Okay, so I'm gonna find this,
like Docs and Sheets and
I know
I don't even know. I know.
Yeah, is Sheets there? Like
Excel.
I suck at Excel. You're probably really good at Excel, huh?
I actually became good at Excel in undergrad. I did data entry
yeah.
for $10 an hour.
Oh, you did?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I was like, I did data entry too, but I still suck at Excel.
No. I did it. For a historical economist.
Oh, cool.
Great guy. His name is Price Fishback.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. His parents knew he was going to be an economist. He was great. And I was super poor, and he really threw me a lifeline. And it was basically an undergraduate research fellowship where all I did was data entry from these old agricultural data after the Great Depression books. And I was, I got my 10 key was so fast.
Nice.
So that was, I'm okay with Excel.
See, this isn't right. This now says Gen Z.
Well, I mean, if you have Gen X and the millennials are technically Gen Y.
Yeah, but there's another name. Fuck me.
I feel like I also feel like
version of the script.
Why does Gen X get to set the name for like the following is the generation after this next one going to be like Gen AA?
Exactly. And that's why I remember
Gen AB
that there was another term that they were using and it was super weird. But now I can't find it. God damn it. Oh well, maybe it'll come to me or maybe somebody will text us and let us know because I can't find it. Wait. No, that still says Gen Z. Fuck it. This was a really interesting chat, wasn't it?
you have to hear about my data entry skills.
That's true. Oh my God. Talk nerdy to me about data entry, you guys. It's funny. I don't even really use Excel anymore. I use Pages and Numbers. I'm so Apple.
Oh, I don't even know what those are.
I use Pages and Numbers, and then what happens is you send files to people, and they're like, I can't open this. You're like, fuck. So I have to export everything as a PDF. Oh, my God. Okay, it's getting a little nerdy up in here. So anyway, you are...
It's the wrong kind of nerdy.
Yeah, I was like, where was I going with this?
Sorry, what glasses cleaner do you use? Do you have a nasal spray you really like?
What brand of psoriasis medicine works the best? Like, all of these things are things I struggle with, you guys. you are more of a millennial. I'm more of a Gen X-ish. Kind of millennial. But the younger kids, this is where I was getting with it. I don't think many of them or a smaller proportion of them are going to encounter some of the traditional kind of W-2 job situations.
I think portfolio jobs are already becoming more and more and more common.
Yeah, I think more and more young people are either, even if they're not working for themselves and incorporating and becoming their own bosses in that way, they're doing more 1099 work mixed with their W-2 work. They're taking small jobs and then moving on to the next job and moving on to the next job.
Well, part of that is for a lot of people, the jobs crisis never ended.
Exactly.
They're underemployed. People are the young people who are underemployed. And if you're going to support yourself and your family, you got to get scrappy.
Yeah, you get scrappy. You work multiple jobs. And so this idea that a company would say, oh, but you're not allowed to do anything else is kind of like, wait, what?
Exactly.
But it used to be the case that, of course, it would make sense for them to say you're not allowed to do anything else. You work for me full fucking time.
Yeah.
You know? And so that is a big, I think, cultural shift that we're seeing in the way that we are employed.
Well, and it's funny, and I don't know if this is going to happen, but part of my exit interview, I was talking with everybody and the HR person is like, could we maybe contract you to do some writing for us?
Oh, how funny. And you're like, sure.
I was like, yeah, definitely. This is my favorite part of this job.
Because that is a big shift that you're actually taking, right? Is that you're moving into doing, like you said, more science communication work.
It sounds funny to be moving to say this while moving into science communication, but it's more creative stuff. I missed the creative aspect. The finance stuff, especially at a quant firm, is so numbers based and so scientific. And so, it was like too scientific for me in a lot of ways, which is what you want if you're investing in a global macro quant firm, but not what you want if you are trying to maintain your soul. If you're me.
And
if you're me
specifically. I mean, you know, and it's different for different people. Like for me, it's soul sucking to like routine is hard for me. A big part of what I like about the kind of work I do is it's always really different. And there's enough variety that I don't get. I'd say it's less bored and more like, you know, I struggle with depression. And for whatever reason, the more routine I'm in, the easier it is for me to slip into that. What do you think specifically it is about for you, working with finances, working with numbers?
So I honestly don't think my issue was exclusive to the finance industry. Mm-hmm. I don't think I am capable of being successful in a job where I'm required to be at my desk for 8 hours a day.
That could be it. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
And I think about the times in my life that I've been most productive and most successful, and I don't think I sat still for more than 20 minutes at a time during those times.
Yeah.
Where having my fingers in multiple projects and you know, even in grad school when I would be working in the mouse room for 10 hours a day, I would have these experiments where I would have to do 2 minutes worth of work every 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would literally like go move the mice around, get back to my computer, work my ass off for 18 minutes, get up, move the mice around. And I would do that for 10 hours and I would get so much done. But there would be a requirement for me to get up and do something else.
Yeah, and completely switch mental gears.
Exactly.
Which is huge. That's why I always really enjoyed teaching. Because even though I had like the certain number of courses and blah, 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 it was like get there at 8 p.m. this day and 2 p.m. this day and run across campus. And even when I did have office jobs, I think the office jobs that I was most successful at were the ones where like I wasn't ever at my desk. I had to run downstairs and go to the photocopier and then go deliver the thing to the guy. And it was.
I mean, I think I would have liked this job a lot better if I had like a laptop and I could have like worked on the couch or worked in the lounge. Or
you were on a desktop?
I was on a desk 8 hours a day. I even had a standing desk and it wasn't enough.
My boyfriend uses a standing desk.
Yeah.
And he has to leave a lot for like go take meetings and then also go into the studios. So there's a lot. But even then in his office, he has to do a standing desk.
Yeah.
I don't think I could do a standing desk. When I write in bed. I have the worst
work hygiene. And generally when I program, which a lot of this job was programming, I do it like I'm a former dancer. I'm like in weird freaking poses on my couch. Like my roommates come home. They're like, oh, you're upside down. Is today Python Day? I'm like, sorry, yes. And they're like, how do you, I don't want
to
know. It
gets more blood to my head.
Exactly.
See, I get you, Tegan.
Exactly.
And so it's interesting, too, because.
And they're like, how many times have you dropped the laptop on your face? And you're like, shut up.
You're like, it's really important.
One time.
Shatterproof screen protector. Oh my gosh. I had to go buy a screen protector. I got a new phone. Oh, yeah. I dropped my phone for the first time ever and my screen shattered. It was super depressing.
My phone, I just switched carriers and there were all sorts of, did I tell you this story?
Yes.
Yeah.
But is it working finally now?
It's mostly, not even completely.
The woes of cell phone
carriers. It's the worst. It's the worst.
But I actually had a pretty smooth experience, which was nice. And I'm very happy to report that I have the iPhone. What is it? 6S?
I don't know. My whole point was I wanted to keep my phone and keep everything about it exactly the same.
And which usually you can do.
Did not happen.
I do find that iPhones make it easy. You plug it in, you back it up, you restore it on the new one. You're golden, which is nice.
Yeah.
That's what's supposed
to happen. That's what's supposed to happen. I agree.
So,
if only.
If only. Yeah, I'm sure. Oh my gosh, you guys listening, I'm sure you all have had like a horrible horror story. Mine has never had to do with data loss, though. I know a lot of people who have dealt with data loss. Mine has always had to do.
That was what my problem was.
I was data loss.
Yeah.
For me, it's always dropping my phones in the toilet.
Ooh.
And it's funny because guys are always like, how do you drop your phone in the toilet? And
I'm so
like,
easy.
Girls keep it in their back pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're probably all going to get butt cancer.
I know. It wants to go into the toilet.
Also, just so you know, cell phones do not cause cancer. You're not going to get butt cancer.
Non-ionizing radiation.
You're not going to get any sort of cancer from your cell phone.
Except butt cancer. Except no, you're not going to get butt cancer. And so, yeah, I actually, no shit, have a bag. Did you hear that? That was gross.
That was a
sibilant S just said. No shit, I have a bag of rice in my, like, in my glove box in my car. It sucks all of the moisture out.
Yeah.
Or it's supposed to.
Yeah.
And it seems to work pretty well. But, you know, it still corrodes and shit.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely did that once to the same cell phone 3 times, and then it just shut off one day and never came back on.
I saved a girl's Tamagotchi that way.
Tamagotchi.
Yeah, she jumped in the pool with it, and I was like, don't turn it on! And I went, and this was at a, I went to weird camps as a kid. This was at an arts etiquette, creative writing, cooking camp.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
And I went to the cooking place and I got rice and I saved her Tamagotchi.
I was a hero. That is really cool. I would not have known to do that in the Tamagotchi days. I dropped my iPhone in the toilet when I was on a shoot for America's Greatest Makers and I happened to be at Tech Shop in San Francisco and I was freaking out and I went to everyone because we were in this big warehouse and I was like, do you have any of those desiccant pellets lying around? Like, because there were all these products everywhere and everyone was like, no, I don't see them. I don't see them. I don't see them. And so then I went to catering and I was like, do you have any rice? And they're like, shit, we didn't bring rice today. And then this guy was so sweet. He brought me a bag of ramen noodles.
Which also exactly. works though.
I
it
tried.
Doesn't work
it
as
was
well.
A little weird. And then
he also sees like oatmeal, like dry oats.
And then I went into the tech shop and the guy at the tech shop was like, oh, I have just the thing. And he took me in to this one weird room and they just had a bucket of desiccant.
There you go.
Like the little blue beads. And he was like, they'll change color to purple when they've absorbed all the liquid. And I was like, I love being here. And so I've replaced my bag of rice with a bag of blue desiccant.
That's really cool, actually.
I know. That's like what nerds.
That's like the nerdiest like way to fix your phone ever.
It's like the.
I'm sorry. This is my emergency butt beads. They're used when my butt betrays me and throws my phone in the toilet again.
It does all the time. I do not want that to happen with this new phone. I'm trying to be careful. But you're always really careful with a new thing until the first time you drop it. And then you treat it like utter dog shit after that.
My last phone, I was like, I don't want a case. It looks so nice. It's wonderful.
No, you need a
3 days in, I dropped it. And I was like, I didn't have insurance. I was like, fuck, whatever. I'm fine. It's fine. And I had a software update like a year later. I'd been dealing with a cracked screen. I was used to it. It was fine. And
you're one of them.
The software update completely bricked my phone. So I took it into the Sprint store and I was like, my phone got the software update. It's a brick. I need you to fix it. I know you know how to do it. Just fix my phone. And she took it and she was like, yeah, we can't fix this. And I was like, why not? And she's like, we can't do software repairs if it has broken hardware.
What?
And I was like, broken hardware? What are you talking about? And she's like, your screen is cracked.
What does that have to do with the software?
And I seriously, I was like, it's custom. And she was like, oh.
You're like, that's an aftermarket improvement.
And she fixed it for me. I was like, it's not broken. It's custom.
Something tells me that's not going to work for anybody listening.
It worked for me. Just roll with it. It's fine, guys. Just be like, no, custom screen.
It's like getting behind the velvet curtain. You just have to act like you're supposed to be there. That's how it always works. Just own it.
Just wear cargo shorts, carry a clipboard. They let you anywhere.
Exactly. People will just assume. And a headset helps. Yeah. A headset. It's like the one time a Bluetooth headset doesn't make you look like a
douche. Like a slightly dirty polo shirt.
Like you've been running. Like be sweaty. Be a little sweaty with crumbs in your beard.
This is how I get craft services when they do shoots in my neighborhood.
That's amazing. Just walk up and have yourself a bagel.
Exactly. You're just like, I'm sorry, do you see my clipboard? I'm totally. These are cargo shorts. This is what you guys wear.
I am totally an associate producer on this production. Right? Why are you looking at me like that?
Exactly.
Everybody listening who doesn't live in LA has no idea what we're talking about. It's a bizarro place to live, by the way. So basically, we were talking about things.
By the way, I don't actually steal food from shoots. I have a job and I eat my own food regularly.
That's good. And it's not ramen noodles every night.
No.
That's impressive. You are a vegetarian.
Ish. I'm semi-ved. A pescatarian slash flexitarian.
True. I love flexitarian, but yeah. I don't know if I like semi-veg better.
I like flexitarian.
It's that commercial. Did you ever see? I think I've talked about this before. Did you ever see those Outback Steakhouse commercials that had Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords in them?
No.
And he's not even Australian.
He's a Kiwi.
He's from New Zealand, but I guess the accent's close enough that they hired him.
Americans are like, it's fine.
Exactly. And they're all really funny. Like, you should YouTube them all. Okay. And there's one where he's like talking about a vegetarian option in the menu. He's like, it's not just for steak. There's and he's like, my favorite is the chicken. And then he's like, I'm a vegetarian, except when I'm eating chicken or pork or beef. Semi-veg. And it kills me every time.
No, like, so, I mean, semi-veg. I stopped eating pork when I was like 14.
Yeah.
And I haven't had it since. I don't like it.
Don't even like bacon?
No, I really don't.
Does it? So I'm always interested in this because a lot of vegetarians that I know who do it for ethical reasons or who do it for environmental reasons.
My joke is always that it's not that I love animals. It's just that I really hate plants. Like, I just will destroy them all in like a visceral teeth
shredding
fashion.
Put them in your belly.
No, I just generally don't like texture of meat. And I also don't like the taste of like pork.
So, yeah, because a lot of people...
So, like, chicken broth, no problem.
Yeah, that's true. You're less, like, you're not one of my friends who's like, I can't get near it because it has a hint of something.
No.
Which is fine. I just don't
like tearing meat with my...
Yeah,
if I require my canines to eat it, not a fan.
I have a little bit of that with, like, I'm not a huge fan of meat that I can really see the anatomy. And I think it's because I've led so many dissections. That, like, when you can see the connective tissue and you can see the blood vessels.
So I tell people, I'm like, at no point have I seen a dead thing, with the exception of a fish. This has happened with fish. But at no point have I seen a dead mammal and been like, I'm going to put that in my mouth.
That's so weird. It's happened with fish.
Freaking fresh fish that you catch yourself and you just gut it and put some garlic and butter in there and put it over the campfire and then just eat it with your hands. So good.
Fish disgusts me.
I know you hate fish.
And when people ask me why I don't eat fish... And I'm like, what do I say to that? I always remember what Sarah Silverman said about fish. When somebody asked her, why don't you eat fish? She's like, because why? I've never looked at a fish and thought, I'm going to fucking eat that.
Like, it's See, I'm the so opposite. Gross. I've never, like, at no point am I, like, walking along and I'm like, oh, I want to put that cow in my mouth.
But
gross.
But when, okay, so here's my question to all of the vegetarians out there who, and I get it because I'm very pro cutting down on meat for environmental purposes. It's something I struggle with that
my
I want to start
just
doing.
Cut out red meat for that reason.
Great. And I think I'd like to, and I don't eat that much red meat, to be honest. I'm much more chicken and turkey for the most
and
part.
And the environmental impact of that is much lower.
I mean, there's other ethical, like inhumane things, but like it's true. The environmental impact is much lower. And I'm trying to do meatless Mondays more often and things like that. Don't know how successful I'll be on the 4th of July. That said, when I smell bacon, it's like orgasmic to me. Oh. And I know some vegetarians who are like, yeah, I'm a hardcore vegetarian, but when I smell bacon, holy shit. But it grosses you out.
When I smell bacon, I'm like, can we open a window?
Interesting.
I'm really not a fan. Yeah, I ate it as a kid. I never liked ham, like ham sandwiches.
I know a lot of people say that. Never they don't like bologna, ham, pork chops.
And bacon was the sort of thing that I ate. Mm-hmm. But like even I preferred like all beef kosher franks. I preferred like I didn't like ham and things.
So pork, yeah, you really
and
didn't like
once
pork.
Once I cut out bacon for even like a month, it was like, oh, gross. Like, did I just eat this because everyone goes crazy about it? Like, this is not, nope.
Yeah. I tend to get turkey bacon when I can, just because, again, it's, like, better for me.
I think also my mom microwaves bacon.
Well, gross. I'll tell you what, though. When we were camping Joshua Tree. Yeah, gross. You don't microwave bacon. What a waste. We were camping in Joshua Tree, and we realized that our friend Casey, who's also been on the podcast, Casey Hanver, brought, like, thick-cut amazing bacon, and we threw it on the grill top with, like, over the campfire on foil, and we pulled that off the fire. And of course, our friend Ben, who's also been on the podcast, Ben Houck, Fight Climate Denial, he was cooking all of our bacon. The vegetarian made us all bacon for breakfast. But it was the most delicious thing I've ever eaten. Mm-hmm. You're like, she has a really grossed out look on her face.
I'm trying to be supportive.
And if you look down at Killer sleeping on the rug right next to us, I think
it's a nice brain palate cleanser.
He's dreaming of bacon. No, he is. Look how happy he looks. So wait, back to where we were before.
It was important.
It was important. Leaving, way back. We're going way back. Okay. Leaving the financial industry.
Yeah.
Moving more into science communication. Yeah. One of the things that you did recently, which is really cool, mm-hmm. is you wrote a few episodes for our friend Vanessa Hill for her YouTube series Braincraft. Yeah, and Vanessa was just on relatively recently, so I think people who are listening will remember her. She's an Australian woman who does these great kind of paper cutout and animated videos
for
YouTube.
Kind of stop motion-y
with obviously Braincraft with like a neuro focus. And I watched one the other day because I knew you wrote that. I didn't realize you had written more.
Yeah.
But the one that I watched that I knew you wrote was about the cost of a human.
The value of a
human life. Which is such a creepy yet fascinating question.
Oh, yeah.
And there's so many different ways to look at what is the value of a human life.
Right.
So you split that into three categories,
Monetary value, which is the like creepy like actuarial,
like the insurance value.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes like not just life insurance, but like health insurance has these weird things where it's like if you cut off your arm, it costs this much. Right. If you cut off your foot, it costs. You're like, what the fuck? Right.
But it's also very much like the Fight Club. Like the narrator in Fight Club works for the car company that tries to figure out whether or not car defaults are worth fixing.
Yeah.
In terms of whether the payoffs are higher than the value of the lives that will be lost.
And like, this happens with pharmaceutical companies too, because every drug that can cure a lot of people can also harm people.
Well, everything you put in your body is going to be harmful for some people.
For some people, there's a chance that if you take some, and that's why we always laugh at it, and I'm always like, what the fuck? Sometimes you'll watch the pharmaceutical commercials, which we have here in the US, I know it's crazy, and they'll be like, may cause blah, 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 and sometimes it's crazy. It's like, may cause death, and it's a nasal spray, and you're like, why the fuck would anybody take this? And sometimes it's the very thing, like there's this gut medicine that a good friend of mine has to take, and I've been seeing the commercials lately, and it says like, It cures like diarrhea, and it's like may cause horrific diarrhea. And yeah. You're like, why would you take a drug that could make it worse? But it's your own physiology.
And you gotta, sometimes you just have to try things to find something that works.
Exactly. And so, but pharmaceutical companies have to do the exact same thing, right? Weigh the value of all the people that the drug strokes out or that the drug.
I know strokes out is such like a terrible
it's such
way
a
to
fucked up thing
people.
To say, but like, I bet you behind closed doors, that's how they word it. It's fucked up. And measure that against the monetary value of the drug.
Right.
Like, what are the profits?
Well, and measure that against the value to the people who take it and who. Their lives are improved. So if 1 million people take it and 10 people die from it, but the other 999, whatever,
yeah, 99,
everybody but them have a significant improvement in their lives, the question is then like, okay, is it worth it?
And then it's interesting because you're like, are we talking about a hepatitis medication that can cure somebody?
Right.
Or are we talking about a cough suppressant
right.
that can maybe make them feel slightly less uncomfortable for 3 days out of a cold?
Exactly. Ugh. And so measuring these things and measuring the added benefit to some people and the cost to others and how much, yeah, it's a hot mess.
And a lot of it must be arbitrary.
Oh, it's so, all of it's arbitrary. Yeah. Of course it's arbitrary. And so much of it is also based on your economic value to society.
Yeah, so that's a fucked up thing, right?
If like, you're like a stay-at-home parent and you die in some sort of freak accident that there may be some sort of settlement you can get out of it, mm-hmm. they're going to be like, well, what was your expected income over your lifetime? Sucks to be your kids.
That sucks. Yeah, you're like the value of my child's life.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the improvement of my child who could be the next fucking president.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
And a lot of times for that, they'll look at like, all right, how much does childcare cost now?
Ugh. So when I was working for a neuropsychologist, one of the ways he made money, because he was in private practice, was that he, you know, he saw patients and blah, 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 but he also was an expert witness. This is very common for people who are like high up in their field. And so he would go and he would testify as to how, you know, so let's say somebody takes a drug and then it causes some sort of neurological deficit, then he would testify as to what their functional, you know, competency is after the fact and what are all the neuropsych, you know, things that come with it. But he had a colleague whose job was to do just what you're talking about. He was a vocational psychologist and he would basically calculate the before and after. For him, he didn't have to worry about calling it the value of their life, luckily,
right.
but he would calculate the before and after
ability. Income potential,
yes,
or earning
income
potential.
I was like, money-making ability.
Yeah.
You know all the fancy words. Income potential, and they compare it, and that would factor into how much the lawsuit was for. And it's fucking crazy how they do that. It's based on your intelligence. It's based on your number of years in education, all these different things.
Well, not just your years in education, but what you're educated in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there's some jobs where like your raise potential is very, very low.
So wait, you're worth more than I am, like way more than I am.
Girl, I'm so overeducated.
So you've got basically three majors in undergrad and a minor.
Yeah.
You've got a master's and a PhD from Caltech. You're also only 27.
Yeah.
So I've got 5 years on you.
Mm-hmm.
I've got like a bunch less degrees. Mm-hmm. I have a master's, but not from fucking like top tier institution. And yeah, I bet you if we compared our actuarial.
I bet your 5 years would probably. I'm curious how your 5 years would compare against my missing chunk of lung, though.
That's true.
Because my health has not been great.
Because I've been in good health, but I was a smoker, which really fucks it up. But I haven't smoked in 5 years, which is a
there
good
you go.
improvement.
Yeah, you've got a good bounce back.
But you're right, because you had valley fever.
Valley fever, yep. Coccidiomycosis.
Which is a fungus?
Yeah, it lives in the dirt in the American Southwest. Most people get it either in Phoenix or Tucson or the surrounding area. And I think 15 out of every 10,000 people, everybody else just gets like a cold and then they're fine.
Yeah.
15 out of every 10,000 get lung lesions.
And that's what happened to you?
That's what happened to me.
And then you had to actually get them removed from your lungs.
Well, then I didn't respond well to fluconazole, which... The women out there who are listening have probably had to take this at some point. They give you
Diflucan.
Yeah, Diflucan, yeah. Fluconazole, they're the same thing. They give you that one little pink pill.
Yeah.
And then you're fine.
Or if you have a really bad yeast infection, sometimes you have to take two.
Sometimes you have to take two. Yeah. I did take four a day.
Holy shit.
It was like the chemotherapy of antifungals. I spent a lot of time puking.
So a lot of times what happens is women have to take Diflucan because when we take an antibiotic, it knocks out our bacterial
the good
population.
Bacteria.
Yeah. And then, which usually keeps our fungus in check. Yep. And then our fungus goes crazy. And then we have to take that to calm down the yeast infection.
Yeah.
So when you have to take that much Diflucan, do you have bacterial overgrowth?
Oh, it messed up everything.
Everything.
It messed up everything. God. Well, I mean, to the point where like, even after I was better, I couldn't. So it turns out a lot of the fungus in your system is actually used to digest other fungus.
Okay.
That makes sense. So like, I couldn't have good vinegar, good sourdough, beer on tap, like mushrooms. There were so many things where I was like, these make me sick. And the doctors would be like, keep eating them until they don't. That's the only way to get your population back up in your gut.
Oh my God, that's so sad.
Yeah. So that might, your 5 years, that might, there might be
a
little.
Yeah, that'd be interesting because it's all those things, right?
And I don't have immunity. It's not one of those things where they're like, oh, you're done. It's one of those things where I'm like, this will probably kill me eventually. Not sure when.
Yeah, and you're more likely. It's kind of like when I had MRSA, I remember after I left and it's like, okay, well, that's done. And they're like, you are significantly more likely to get MRSA again.
Exactly.
Like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's true. All of these things factor in. Health history, probably not just your health history, but your family health history.
Yeah.
You know, how likely are you to get cancer? How much cancer is in your life? Alzheimer's, all of that. But also age, right? The older you are, the less your life is worth.
Yeah, because you don't have as long to earn more money. Well, it depends. I mean, if you make a crap ton of money and you're 55 and still working.
Yeah, that's true.
Versus if you're making minimum wage at 35,
but I've always wondered about that viewpoint, right? Because that's just a societal view.
So American.
It's so American that young people have more potential. So they're like, because when a young person dies, it's like really sad, which is true. And it is really sad.
So I would say it's so American to base people's worth on their vocational contribution.
But it's also so American, I think, to minimize the elderly. And to maximize, we are a very youth-obsessed culture, and there are a lot of cultures across the world. Maybe it's not so American, it's so Western.
But I would say, yeah, because I would say, look at what England's going through right now with Brexit, where...
Yeah, but England's basically America.
Huge number...
like, we're very fucking similar. You know we are.
They're like
there are McDonald's
parents,
and
like,
Starbucks on every corner over there.
But like, the older population is the people who voted for Brexit, and the younger population, especially the kids who are even too young to vote, are the ones who are going to have to deal with the consequences for the rest of their lives.
And we have a lot of that going on here. But we also have this weird system where we're so focused on independence that when we get old, we leave the house.
Right.
We're not that concerned about taking care of our aging populations. We don't have good safety nets in place for them. And in most cultures, you don't have to worry so much about having a strong social security net. You don't have to worry so much about having strong government programs because, like, you fucking take your parents in.
Right.
That's what you're supposed to do. They raised you and then you take care of them as they age.
But at the same time, my generation is the first generation in American history who's going to be worse off than their parents.
Yeah.
So
maybe mine.
Well, it depends on whether you're an Xer or a Y-er. Right.
Even Xers and I think.
Y-ers are the first ones that are like Y-ers. You or millennials.
It's killing me that I can't remember the other name of the aughts generation.
I'm sorry.
Somebody listening is like screaming it in their car right now. Because it's like the cord cutters, there's all these different words that they use for. Yeah, because they don't, not like umbilical cord.
They don't watch TV. What did you think I was like?
No, you made a face.
I was not indicating anybody's belly button at all.
And I was like, no, it's like the TV. They cut the cord to the TV, not the umbilical.
Is that millennials? But I feel like
the next generation after millennials.
Oh, but because I feel like no one I know has TV.
Yeah.
And I also feel like we are plugged in constantly. Like, cord cutting is so counterintuitive in that case.
But so one of the big, I think, shifts between millennials and the next generation is that you remember getting the internet.
I don't. My family actually had a server before my school had
internet.
But
your family was weird.
My family's weird.
Yeah. So
we're like the early of the early adopters.
Most kids your age remember getting the internet.
Yeah.
most of this next generation, the aughts or whatever you want to call them, the Zs,
have no pre-internet memory.
Yeah, they grew up as quote digital natives. Yeah. You know, they from the time they were born, their parents already had the iPhone had already been out. Blah blah. Like I remember getting a cell phone. I had a pager first.
My parents had a cell phone when I was a kid too, and it was one of those ones that was like everyone else was excited about their car phones.
Yeah,
and I was like, my parents got a cell phone, and the battery was like a freaking suitcase that you had to carry around, and the phone was massive. But my parents had a cell phone.
It's like pre-Zach Morris phone.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's massive. It looks like, you know those like old war movies when they've got those like phones? It looks like that. It's a giant radio phone. But it was like one of the first cell phones. I think my dad still has it in a closet somewhere.
I wonder how much that's worth.
Probably like $250.
Yeah, you're like not much.
My dad's kind of he loves all these electronics. He's kind of a pack rat about it.
That's interesting. And like old electronics.
Yeah, and he's always like, oh, I wonder how much our old Commodore 64 is worth.
But if
and
you
he
take
goes online,
care
it's
of
like
it.
Nothing.
Yeah, like nothing.
It's
like,
been in the Arizona garage.
Yeah, because I do see that a lot where I'll go to antique shops and things, and I'll see really cool old electronics, but they're all rusted out and like crappy. And you're like, oh, that could have been so cool.
At least you know it didn't rust. There's no air or water in the air for it to rust.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. It's just desiccated.
It's just
it's word of the day.
It petrified instead of putrefying.
Ew. So, okay.
Sorry.
So we only got to the first part of
monetary value of a life.
Okay. Monetary value is the first one.
Yeah. The second one is life in terms of comparing it to other lives. So we talked about things like the trolley problem, which Vanessa's done another video on.
Which has now become the electric car problem.
Right.
I'm seeing this like this.
Except the trolley problem is different because you have to make a choice rather than
the
having something
the
built
choice.
In to make the choice. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really the question, right? Because we haven't solved or the trolley problem is still it's a paradox. You know, I don't know if it's a paradox.
So
what
the trolley problem,
it?
The trolley problem, it's an ethical dilemma. It's a
thought
problem.
Yeah, there you go.
It basically says there's a trolley heading towards five people that have been tied to the tracks by some sort of mustached villain who's wringing his hands and laughing because they didn't pay the rent or something. I don't know. And you are at a lever and you can pull this lever and the trolley will be diverted to where there's like one person tied to the tracks. And this is like the evil. I don't know. But so the point is you can either passively let the five people die. Or you can pull the lever and actively kill the one person and then the five people live.
And then, of course, there's variations on this.
There's so many variations.
It's one person, but one is older, one is younger, one's a baby, one's, you know, elderly. And then, of course, now with the electric car problem, which is especially relevant after seeing the guy who died in self-driving mode, in autopilot mode in his Tesla, this, you know, ongoing ethical thought experiment of like, if you're in an electric car. A self-driving car, I should say. I've been saying electric car. Thank you. A self-driving car.
Can you run your electric car on babies?
Yeah, exactly.
No. It's the electric car problem. The self-driving car problem.
A self-driving car problem is if you're in your self-driving car and it has to swerve to avoid another person that's
a person
there.
Like steps out in front of it.
But if it swerves, it'll kill you. Would it rather hit that person or would it rather destroy you because you're the passenger?
Or if
you're no longer the driver.
Or if there's like two people who step out, does it swerve into the young person or the old person?
And it's hard. You know, a lot of people are like, point blank, I know the answer. Like, of course, you actively kill one to save to pass away. But I like the one-to-one if one of them is yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's where things start to get really complicated.
Yeah.
Really complicated.
But I mean, you can just look at like the safety behind these cars. Like Tesla is a crazy safe car.
Yeah.
There was one case where the Tesla caught on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were trying to figure out what happened because...
Because the batteries had a tendency to catch on fire before it was released.
They didn't have a tendency. Okay. They really didn't. But it was one of those cases where...
There's a fire risk involved with lithium ion.
If your electric car catches on fire once, it can sink your whole company.
Yeah, of course.
And so
if
like,
anything happens to Tesla at the beginning. Yeah.
And so they were like, we want to make sure that this is like not a problem at all.
Ever.
And it turned out that the case of this, the guy like hit a traffic circle or a roundabout going like 140 miles an hour. The car like rolled several times, slid like several hundred feet. The guy got out and was fine. And then the car caught on fire.
Which, like, how many fuel injection cars? You know, think about a standard gas car with, a combustible engine. Like,
and so they put in heavier titanium plates on the bottom, and now it's not an issue.
Fine. Like, yeah, it's never happened. Yeah.
But the guy, the fact that the guy walked away from it, like, the car was like, fire pending. Please evacuate the vehicle. And the guy got out after that huge crash. And then the car, like, they're such safe cars. This is really a freak thing. And I don't.
And it's really, like, I remember when
we
still
don't know if
article,
it was driver error or not. Like, we don't have any information on this.
Yeah. I keep reading reports. Some are, you know, some are new. There's a chance he might have been watching a movie while the car crashed on autopilot. But I do remember when I read that headline, it was just like, fuck. You know how sometimes you read headlines where you're like, what a bummer, like, for everyone.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's incredibly sad for this man. It's incredibly sad for the future of the company. It's incredibly sad for everybody. But we talk about these ethical questions.
Yeah.
And we talk about the fact that this is a real risk, right? We're not living in a world where all cars are self-driving yet. And even when we do start living in a world where all cars are self-driving and they have all of these safety mechanisms in place, they are going to come upon one of these
unexpected situations.
Which decision do I make? And so, you know, this is the number two on the value of a human life. Like, which life is worth more in this situation?
And we talked in the video, we talk a lot about things like 9/11,
mm-hmm.
where the way that the victims fund distributed the money was based off of earnings potential.
Interesting.
And so there were things like, you know, bankers, the families of bankers who died during 9/11 received significantly more money in a majority of cases than the families
responders.
Of the firefighters who ran in to try and save those bankers.
Fuck.
And
because they probably didn't take into account at all how many other lives they could save.
Exactly.
It's like a physician or, like, let's say an ER physician who actually, you know, does trauma a lot and saves lives on a nightly basis. They don't really make that much money. So you compare trauma physicians make good money?
They
really?
Do all right.
In ER?
Yeah.
I guess I'm comparing them to other types of doctors. Like, they don't do as well as anesthesiologists. They don't do as well as radiologists. But okay, so they do obviously better than somebody who does, like, janitorial work.
Yeah.
But if you were to compare, or like, oh, this is a better one, a social worker.
Yeah.
Like a master's level social worker who fucking saves lives. Like,
who volunteers at the suicide hotline.
Exactly.
Who
really saves lives would probably not get as much of a payout as a banker who destroys life.
Okay. Pump the brakes.
Let's say
the value added is just in a
let's say
area.
A Wall Street mortgage. I can't remember all the words from The Big Short. Credit default swap. That's a thing. She's laughing.
Trader. A trader of credit default swaps.
A trader.
This was in, but that's with a D, by the way. Trader.
Yeah, I said trader. I didn't mean trader. Traitor. He's also a traitor. No, but I'm trying to
this somebody. Also, yeah.
Somebody who sells toxic mortgages.
Yeah.
The value of that person's life versus the person who is a crisis
somebody
counselor.
Somebody who buys toxic mortgages.
Exactly.
Everybody's culpable.
Yeah. But then that person who is impoverished, who's struggling, their life is physically worth less, which is fucked up.
Monetarily worth less. And so then you have, like, the trolley problem where you're like, okay, one banker or five firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, does that make a difference?
Oh, yeah, because the pool is only so big. I mean,
exactly.
That's the thing that's important about economics. And it's the reason that I think, as somebody who's not an economist, but who thinks that she knows something about economics because she reads a lot of Robert Reich. I definitely get upset when I look at this, like, trickle-down theory and this very Reaganomics situation, because it seems like they forget to take into account that the pie is only so big.
Well, I think part of it is that the notion that the pie is only so big is both true and false.
Interesting.
In the sense that the pie at a given time has a fixed size,
mm-hmm.
but the pie is ideally constantly growing.
Hopefully.
So with improvements in technology, we can do more with less.
Yeah,
with improvements in education, we can do more with less. If you look at this, the idea that the world is a zero-sum game is blatantly false.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you can figure that out is, like, okay, would you rather live now or would you rather live in 1916?
Nope.
Or would you rather live in 1816?
Nope.
Or
I don't want the Spanish flu.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's if the world were a zero sum game, you should be indifferent between these.
Interesting.
Because okay, there would be no bigger pie.
But that said,
Trickle-down economics has quantitatively been proven to not work.
Yeah. And also at any given time, like you said, if you freeze frame time, hoarding funds in one area physically takes them away from another area. Like just more money isn't made.
Yeah.
Which we know to be the case. But somehow that seems to be forgotten.
Yeah. I think part of it also is that if I give Bill Gates $1,000, he's going to be like, thank you. I'll just put it in an account somewhere, whatever.
Yeah, he'll just keep it in his wallet, probably. He'll be like, it's like valet money.
Tip the busboy, I don't know. you know, so he just puts it in his wallet. If I give, you know, $1,000 tip to our waiter who has three kids, all, you know, two of whom were in diapers, and a wife who's, you know, been out of work since she had the last kid, they're going to go out and buy stuff. They're going to go out and buy diapers. They're going to go get it moving within the economy. And
that's true.
The fact that it's moving, actually, it trickles up.
Yeah, and that's the point. There was a really good point made in a Robert Reich movie called Inequality for All, which is based on his book. But it's interesting because they interview this really fucking rich guy who's like really rich. Mm-hmm. And he's like, here's the thing. Like, when I buy a car, I buy the nicest car available. Like, I'm going to buy the crazy expensive Audi that costs, you know, multi-hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I do put that money into the economy. But this guy, he owns, like, a pillow factory, and that's why he's rich. And he's like, ain't nobody need more than two pillows.
Yeah.
He's like, I could buy the most expensive pillow on the market, but I'm still only buying two pillows. Yeah. And that's the thing, because I'm one human. And so this idea that because I'm so rich, I'm going to keep putting money back into the economy, it's not true. What ends up happening is the richest of the rich hoard their money and then make money on their money, and they actually don't put it back into the economy.
I think one thing people don't realize, though, is that when you save money, when you put money into a savings account, or when you put money into the stock market or anything like that, that money doesn't just sit there. You're not just investing it. It's just sitting there. The bank doesn't take it and put it in the vault.
Yeah, it's fungible. They use it for other shit.
They lend it out to people. So even if you save money, unless it's like physically in your wallet or in your pocket, it's being lent out for other investment.
That's why at any given time, all banks are basically are functionally insolvent. Like if we all pulled our money out of a bank right now, they wouldn't have enough to pay us all, would they?
No.
Yeah,
no, I think there's like a 10% margin requirement that all banks have. But like, who's going to do that?
Yeah.
Like that's,
there's just kind of the assumption that everything is always in flux.
Yeah.
So at any given time, only X amount is ever going to be physically required. Like the capital,
money is
like
trust.
Liquid. Yeah. Oh,
it's,
totally.
It's, yeah.
And
there's no gold standard. It's a dollar's worth a dollar because everyone knows it's a dollar.
And this is why I always get pissed when I have friends who are talking about moving to other countries and they're like, but money's worth more there. And I'm like, yeah, but once you live there, that's just a dollar to you. Like, it's fine when you're visiting. Like, that's true. When you decide to go to another country and visit and your money is worth more, that's true. But once you live there and you have a job and you have your standard of living, their dollar is the same to them as our dollar is to us.
Yes,
unless
no.
you're talking about extreme
like,
poverty.
There's also
or
like imports and exports.
Oh, so, yeah, that's true. If that's your business.
So if like the dollar is really strong, that means that buying shit from the rest of the world is really cheap.
Yeah.
But it also means that if you're trying to sell shit overseas, you're kind of SOL.
Yeah, it's true. It works on both sides. It's like when you're buying and selling a house at the same time.
Yeah.
If it's a buyer's market, it's great when you're buying. Right. But when you sell, you get fucked and vice versa. That's how it's going to work. Like, it's very rare that you're lucky enough to buy in a buyer's market and sell in a seller's market.
But it is important in that case to consider if you are planning on retiring in another country, make sure your retirement savings keeps that in mind.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because you can get royally screwed on that.
Or you can move to Bangkok.
There you go.
Yeah. And then you're great.
It's like the vacation I took to Australia last December. It was like, oh my God, everything's 30% off. And actually, I just had friends who were visiting, who went to visit England the Saturday after Brexit. They're like, fire sale.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
Vacation is so cheap.
I'm taking home all the marmalade.
Tea for, there's so much tea, we can throw it into the harbor. Oh, maybe.
It's the 4th of July, man. So, wait, what were we just talking
about? So that was the
second
thing.
No, but before we get to the third thing, because I feel like there's something else I was going to say about the trickle-up economics, which is really how things work. We talked about trickle-up. We were talking about the value of the dollar and there's how there's no gold standard.
Right.
And something happened in my brain because it is 10:10 p.m., which is actually quite early for me, so I shouldn't blame it on the time or the fact that we just ate so much food at Gyukaku.
Such good food.
Oh, my God. It's so good. I'm still digesting. My hiccups are gone.
I know. They've been gone since you talked about the rabbit before the podcast. No one knows what we're talking about
right now.
And
we're not going to explain it.
Okay.
Okay, so what? Fuck it. What's the third thing?
The third thing is the value of the human life in terms of just like your meat sack that you live in.
Ew.
That's what we are. We're like sentient meat sacks.
With bony things inside.
Yeah, basically.
Meat bones, meat. What do you think if there was an owl that was like 10 times the size of a human and it ate humans, what would a human owl pellet look like?
Crow.
That's all I can think about. What do you say?
I imagine it would look like a pellet, only human size.
Have any of you dissected an owl pellet? Oh, you can't answer me. Answer me, right? They're going, yes, this is so much fun. I'm such a nerd that I have an owl pellet dissection lab in my closet.
It's important.
That I'm just saving
for a
fun day.
You just find one, you're like, ooh, I wonder what this guy was eating.
Wrap it in foil, take it home, hoard them.
And then you're like, God damn it, people are throwing their plastic into owls. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Stop.
I've been lucky enough that I've never seen anything like really upsetting like that. And now I'll
this. I love how you're like, oh, mouse parts. This is totally normal. You're like, oh, bug bits. This is great. And then you're like, is that styrofoam in my owl pellet?
That would piss me up. By the way, San Francisco banning styrofoam.
I'll be interested to see how that shakes out.
I'm really excited about
it. Yeah, I think
because then I think we'd adopt it here pretty soon
in
LA.
So.
We do that a lot. We have plastic bag ban.
My family hates that.
The plastic bag ban?
Although, so the plastic bag ban is on grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm crafty. I'm like a 85-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time a while ago, I went and bought yarn right after the plastic bag ban happened. And I went to Michael's and they have plastic bags.
They do?
They're allowed to because they're not a grocery store.
Oh, I wish it was everywhere.
But I use them for like trash bags. Like,
yeah.
Either I'm going to buy plastic bags for my bathroom trash can or I'm just going to recycle these.
That's what I do. Usually I travel so much that I use and I bring home my dirty clothes in the little laundry bag that was in the hotel closet and then I reuse it.
So I'm checking out and I ask this guy, I'm like, holy crap, you guys have plastic bags. Like, why do you still have plastic bags? And the 16-year-old gangly, weird-looking kid behind the register at Michael's just turns to me. He goes, fuck the police.
Oh my God.
So and I was funny. Just like, cool, thanks. Can I get a couple extras? See ya.
That so reminds me of this. I listen to Adam and His Package, which is a super fun and weird band that none of my friends like. And Adam Gorin, singer, he has a song called Anarchy Means That I Litter. And it's the same kind of concept. Like, come on, you fucking idiot. Like this idea that like, think about what you're doing when you do something like that. Like, that's not what it means to be an anarchist. Yeah. You know, it's like the police are helping you. It's so funny. It's like,
this 16-year-old kid in Pasadena. You're like, oh yeah, this kid's OG right here.
But I remember that growing up, like being, you know, semi-smart, but really rebellious and having smart friends who are also rebellious and struggling with those kinds of things because you want to kind of fuck the system and you have this attitude of like, you know, the police keeping us down and blah, blah, blah. But you when you're that young and you haven't thought it through, you don't target the right areas. You're not talking about, you know, violent crime by the police.
I tried to get voting rights for 16 to 18-year-olds.
Well, okay, see that, because you were an
nerd.
Yeah, you were an overachiever child. But a lot of kids
got in a lot of trouble, but that was like...
But it was like within the system trouble. It was like, I'm trying to make things better.
I mean, I got kicked out of school for writing a letter proposing civil disobedience against the dress code.
You also
got kicked out, or maybe you got chastised in your elementary school, because what did you do to the moon landing tape? Was it the moon landing tape?
It's preschool. That was preschool. I was three.
And what did you do to your teacher's moon landing tape?
This is awful. This is like my most shameful moment. I was messing with the VHS and I erased it. That's so if fun. My preschool teacher is out there, I am so, so sorry. I have no memory of this, but my parents have reminded me regularly and I am so sorry. But that's also why I went to kindergarten early.
There's a lot of moon landing tapes out there.
It's but okay. This was like a personal one.
I know, but she wasn't there. So it was still just the newsfeed footage. Okay, wait, what was the third one?
The third one is sacks of meat.
Oh, sacks of meat. What the fuck does that mean, though? Okay, we're sacks of meat. How does that have to do with the value of a life?
We have 8 life-saving organs, each of us, healthy people. And
can we name them?
Sure.
Liver.
Kidneys.
Kidneys.
That's all you've got for me?
No,
come on.
No, give me more. Probably heart valves.
Heart?
Yeah.
Because just the heart in general. You can do a full heart transplant.
You can do a full heart transplant. Lung transplants you can do. Pancreas?
Yep, pancreas is on there.
Okay. Probably not the gallbladder.
Nope. You don't really need it. Lung is actually 2.
Lung would be 2. Okay, so that's
so lung is 2, 6. And I think liver is 2 because you can do 2 lobes.
Oh, it's 7. Okay. But kidneys might be 2 too. That might be
Yeah,
eight.
I believe it is as well. Okay. So I think that's
because you
8.
Don't really do a stomach. You can, there's little things, but like you don't do stomach, you
so
don't do a
So in addition to those 8, you can improve. If you are an organ donor, and I very, very strongly recommend everyone go sign up to be an organ donor right now.
I'm an organ donor.
You're going to be dead. You're not going to use it.
And nobody's going to kill you for your organs.
No one's going to kill
you
for your organs.
And if you're on a heart-lung machine, they're going to wait to make sure that you can't come back. Nobody's
literally,
gonna pull
doctors
the plug.
Aren't even allowed to check your donor status until after you're dead.
Because so many paranoid Republicans. I tried to pass legislation.
I think
just
people in general freak out.
I know. It's just a dumb thing to think that anybody's going to kill you for your organs.
You can save 8 lives and improve the lives of up to 50 people through cornea and soft tissue transplants.
Yeah.
And that includes things like I said, your cornea, your tendons and ligaments,
your skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can do skin grafts. They can do intestine things mm-hmm. where people have major gut issues. It's like a next level poop transplant.
Yeah. I think they can do stuff with like your teeth too.
They can do, I don't know about that. That sounds kind of weird.
No, I think so.
I mean, they can improve so many lives. Mm-hmm. Like, please, 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 please be a donor.
I wonder if they can do bone marrow after you're dead. Maybe.
I also highly recommend that everyone donate blood now.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
if you're allowed to.
If you're allowed to. Yeah. And there are a lot of people who are allowed to. And if you're not allowed to because you're gay, please scream at people about that.
Totally, because they test for everything that they're concerned that you have.
Yep, and if you are, if you have ever needed blood or you just want gay people to carry their blood donating weight, also scream about it.
Yep.
Like, everyone should be allowed to donate blood if it's not going to get other people sick.
Yeah, I agree.
So, donate blood.
I would like to donate blood, but at any given time, I've generally had a tattoo pretty recently. That's
yeah,
always a
you have
big
to be
issue.
A year out of yeah. any tattoo. If you go to a place that has good autoclaves, you can do it pretty quickly after an ear or skin piercing without it being an issue.
Oh, okay. That's good.
But yeah, and then sign up to be a bone marrow donor. Mm-hmm. Like, the chances of them calling you are pretty slim, especially if you are mixed race. Sign up to be a bone marrow donor.
Really?
They are in such high demand because the match has to be much, much stricter than it does for blood. Blood is just, you know, type and Rh factor.
Yeah.
Bone marrow, it has to be a match more similar to what you need for like kidney transplants.
Don't they sometimes, when they do bone marrow transplants, don't sometimes people end up with a different blood type?
No,
I guess you have to have the same blood type.
Yeah.
But they end up with like...
You can end up with like other people's
DNA
in your
you.
Bloodstream.
Yeah, you can definitely like test on DNA test genetically differently.
As differently,
or
yeah.
You'll end up with like new antibodies that you never had
But you'll
before.
Also test as alive.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, saving people's lives.
That is important.
And they can do that. It's so easy. And if you get that call that says, hey, we need your bone marrow to save somebody's life, and they need you to travel, they pay for all that. Mm. It's
interesting.
Like, you can save somebody's life. It's really cool. You just gotta get stabbed in the hip a little bit. It's fine.
It hurts really fucking bad, doesn't it?
It hurts less these days. Actually, I don't even think they have to stab you in the hip. I think they can do it from very similar to like a blood donation these
days. Really? Not like a... I always thought it was like a spinal tap.
No.
That's good.
They used to go into
your hip bones.
But now, with new advancements in like stem cell stuff, they can pull stuff right out of your bloodstream.
Interesting.
Be a donor. Save lives.
Okay, so you can donate so your body, if you have healthy organs.
If you are completely healthy, if you somehow, like, die, like, cervical dislocation, like, the nicest way you can possibly go.
It's like, how we sacrificed our animals in the lab. Yeah, it's honestly, it's, like, the most humane way you can go.
You're, like, in the hospital, and you trip and fall, and you hit your neck just wrong, mm-hmm. and you're dead instantly, but you're already in the hospital, and you're otherwise completely healthy. You can save 8 people and improve the lives of 50 people.
And so that, in many ways, means that the cost of, or the value, mm-hmm. I should say, of the human life goes up a lot more based on your potential as a meat sack to save other lives.
Well, it's also the idea of, and this gets like really morbid and awful.
Pretty much fucking everything we've talked about so far is morbid and awful.
But it means that by continuing to live your life and be your awesome self, which everyone should continue doing.
Yes.
You are choosing not to save 8 people.
Oh, interesting. So this comes back to kind of the trolley thing.
Yeah, except you are standing on one of the tracks.
Yeah, which is more like the self-driving car thing, not the electric car.
Not the electric car thing. It's more like the self-driving car thing. But, I mean, you also, the most effective ways to get people to donate organs is to switch to an opt-out system. So right now we have an opt-in system.
So we default to it.
So we default to not donating right now. You can switch to defaulting to donating.
Yeah.
That's huge. There's also, they do these things called cascades, where let's say my friend Joe needs a kidney and I am not a match. I go out and find somebody who is a match.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, if you donate your kidney to my friend Joe, I will donate my kidney to this random person that I've never met, but who I am a match for.
Interesting.
And then you find somebody who's close to that random person, but who isn't a match, and they donate their kidney to somebody else who donates. So you find a bunch of people who aren't a match for their friends, and you find people they are a match for, and everyone just shifts their kidneys down one.
You know what else I think you should do?
Hmm.
And I know I learned this when I did a story for the local show I work on KCET called SoCal Connected. I did a story about like the death positive movement and these death parties and people talking about death. And during one of them, they passed out, what are they called? Advanced directives.
Everybody should have a living will.
Yeah. You should fill out an advanced directive.
How old you are. I don't care how healthy you are. Have a living will. It makes it so much easier on your family if anything ever happens.
And ensure that your family knows what your wishes are, you know, especially your next of kin, your closest family, because ultimately they're going to make a decision if you have something legally, you know, binding, if you have something written, and if you're because advanced directives are really cool nowadays. They have everything. Like, what's going to happen to my Twitter page? You know, what's going to happen? Because these are things that you don't think about, but they're important. And if you don't make it clear what you want to do, like I remember one of the women at the at the dinner we were at, which I don't think ever made it to air, was talking about going to clean out her mother's home. And she remembers being really frustrated because her mom didn't do a living will and she didn't do advanced directives. So she had all these photos of her mother's, tons and tons of photos. And she's like, I don't have anywhere to put all of these. I don't know what to do with them. There's a handful that I really want to keep and cherish. And the rest of them, like, honestly, we don't need them.
Yeah.
But I feel guilty getting rid of them because she never gave me permission to get rid of them. And there's so many little things like that in people's lives where if you make it really clear, and the advanced directives, you can find them on the internet. They're pretty easy to find. They're so thorough. And they'll help you answer what happens to Mr. Killer? You know, what happens to my cherished possessions? What happens to my internet footprint? All of those things. Like Oliver Sacks, when he died, his Twitter handle turned into the Oliver Sacks Foundation.
Right.
And now it still tweets and you get to learn things about all of the things that you knew that he was interested in during his life. Like, that's really cool.
I carry around a red thumb drive that says ICE on it, which is in case of emergency. And on that thumb drive has my medical history, my living will, my advanced directive. It's got a folder that's like, okay, now I'm dead. This is what you need to know for that. It's got stuff for just, and I basically, whenever I like go to a new yoga studio and they're like, who is your emergency contact? I just make sure whoever that person is knows that if they ever get that call, they say, look for the red thumb drive.
Interesting.
And I have it with me all the time, And I like, unless I'm talking about it like this, I never think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And it's just one of those things where if something happens to me, look for the red thumb drive.
Hmm. Why red?
I think it was just cheapest. I got it when I was like 18.
On that note, we did a final two questions back when you were on episode 37. Maybe we should do it again because I wonder if you're – do you even remember what you said?
I don't.
Good, good, good. Because so maybe they've changed or maybe when I go and listen, it'll be like, holy shit, she said the exact same
thing. I'm so consistent.
Yeah, but we'll do it again, I think. So again, looking to the future in whatever context is important to you right now, whether it's personal or global or anything in between, what is the thing that you that keeps you up the most at night, that you're most worried about? And on the flip side, what are you most excited and optimistic for?
I think the thing I'm most concerned about is probably very consistent mm-hmm. before. Because we haven't gotten better. Get it together, world. Global warming, climate change freaks me out.
The ozone hole is healing.
Congratulations. That's the global initiatives that caused us to be able to close the ozone hole. Mm-hmm. Like, we need some more of that sort of thing, because I probably said this last time too, 80% of turtle species are expected to go extinct by 2020. Do not, like,
and we're way closer to 2020 now.
You can't do this to me, world. I need my turtles.
Wow.
It's and that's just turtles. Like, the mass extinction that is happening right now. And that we just don't notice, because when we go to the zoo, we see the same animals. Like, no. There's so many living things on this planet. Mm. And we are killing them off at an alarming rate because we can't get our shit together because we are highly adaptive ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's costing whole species their lives. And I literally, like, I'm going to, like, try and go to bed tonight and have a panic attack in my bathroom instead. It really upsets me that we are killing off all of these creatures without even, like, Lonesome George has a shrine in the American Museum of Natural History that I go to whenever I'm in New York.
Also in the Galapagos. I mean, he's not there anymore, but there's a lot of stuff, you know, because he lived out his life there.
Well, and
he's from there.
That's like that turtle. He's not even turtle. That tortoise gets that recognition of, like, hey guys, look how we fucked up as a planet. But there are so many species that don't get that and that are just gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like when you meet a stupid person and they're like, wait, owls are real?
Yeah.
Except you're going to be like, they were.
Like the dodo bird.
Yeah.
That we hunted to oblivion.
Except, like, owls are going to be the dodo bird. It's going to be a thing that kids read about in Harry Potter and don't think exists.
Like a dragon.
Like a dragon.
Wow. Oh, God.
Like, we can't do this. Get it together.
And it's true. Turtles, frogs.
Frogs. I mean, ugh.
Yeah. Just a lot of amphibian species. And just look at biodiversity in the ocean. I mean, I sound like a broken record.
No, it's awful.
Yeah. Okay. Give me something good. What are you optimistic about? Put me in a good mood.
What am I optimistic about? I'm so
Don't be
upset about the turtles.
Oh, no. Shit,
I have a pet tortoise. It's like a really...
What's his name?
Yurtle
the turtle.
She's
Yurtle the turtle, but she's not a turtle. She's a tortoise.
She's a box turtle. She's a desert box turtle, which is technically a breed of tortoise.
Gotcha.
I've had her since I was 5, so that explains the name.
But isn't that great, these long-lived, like...
My cat died, and I told my parents I'm never going through this again, and I got a turtle.
I want a crow. And crows live
crazy smart, though. That's like a toddler.
I know, they're crazy smart. They live a really long time, but you can't keep them as pets anymore. But they used to be a really common pet.
My turtle got grandfathered in. Yeah, you can't remove them from the wild, release them to the wild, buy or sell them. But she's grandfathered in.
Interesting. Although if I had a crow, I wonder how it would take the stuffed crow that's on our bookshelf.
Probably not well.
Although a taxidermist that a lot of us follow here in Los Angeles, which is a weird thing to say, Alice Markham, who one of these days I'll convince to come on the podcast.
I want to see a crow riding Killer, like onward, noble steed.
With Killer's bow tie that he's rocking right now. But our taxidermist, Alice Markham, has a pet toucan, mm-hmm. a toucanette. And she always hashtags it not taxidermy. And recently she taxidermied two toucans. And I was wondering how her toucan took that. Okay, give me something good.
Okay. I think the thing I am most hopeful for is the resurgence of science interest that I've seen recently in the general public.
For sure. And how cool it is to be into science.
Like there have been a couple times when I've met people and they've started talking about science and they're like, they're going. And when they find out I'm a scientist, they're like, but there's also this like, oh, I was just pretending to know stuff to seem cool. And I'm like, that's great.
Yeah. No, but you got a lot of it right.
You can actually know stuff and be even cooler. Yeah. It reminds me of like obesity versus marathon running. So like obesity in America is going insane. Mm. But also the number of people who have run their first marathon in the last year has been skyrocketing.
Interesting.
So you've got this sort of bimodal distribution where you've got people who are who are running 26.2 miles and you've got people who weigh, you know, 400 pounds.
Yeah.
And in the science sphere, it's like the same thing. You've got people who think scientists are out to steal their children away from God.
Yeah.
Or you've got people who are like, oh, I want to know how things work. Like, there's a robot going to Jupiter tomorrow?
Holy shit, that's tomorrow. That's tomorrow. Today, if you're listening to the podcast, the day it was released.
Go check out Juno. It's super cool.
Oh my God, so cool.
Like, or wait, we sent, like, Cameron, like, went to the bottom of the ocean in a robot? Like, he can do that? That's so cool.
And the fact that so because a lot of people will say offhand, and I've done this too, like, oh, it's like Idiocracy. Like things happen and then you're like, oh, it's like that Mike Judge movie, Idiocracy. But you forget the other side of the equation, which is no, the only reason Idiocracy is because it's unimodal. It's all going down the toilet in that direction. But the truth is, yes, I think we are seeing a shift away from the center, which is a bummer. But there are so many people embracing science and getting excited about science. And we're even seeing more science programming on television.
That's part of why I'm able to like quit my job and just start talking to people about science, either in writing or on TV or on podcasts or whatever, is because there's a demand for it. And that makes me really, really happy.
That makes me happy, too. You know what else makes me happy?
Huh?
That I got to talk nerdy with you. So, Tegan, thank you for coming on the show. Let everybody know how they can bother you on the internet.
On Twitter, I'm Teague Wall, T-E-A-G Wall, like what holds up the ceiling. and then mostly I spend time either there, that's the same thing on Instagram, or you can find me at nerdbrigade.la.
Nerd Brigade in the house.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It was so much fun.
I had a good time.
And thank you, everyone, for coming back week after week. I'm really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.